From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the sixth day of February 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes. She's at Stuart Peterson. A bit later in the program, Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City will be here to discuss the agricultural weather forecast in North and South America. And along the way today, we'll check in with Clint Robinson, a Moultrie County, Illinois farmer who's been using cover crops for the last 5 years. We'll talk about his successes and his failure. We'll also check in on last night's State of the Union address made by President Donald Trump and his mentions of agriculture, four of them, by the way. Only three were of substance. The other was just arbitrary, along with some other information. And we'll do all of that right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're now joined by Jackie Vegg. She's at Stuart Peterson to take a look at the agricultural markets. Jackie, thanks so much for being with us today. Boy, it sure looks like it's just been, a quiet day again in Chicago, and it's kind of been that way for most of the week.
Oh, yeah, it's a yawner. I'll tell you what. Anytime we have the China on lunar holiday, it always slows the markets down. But I think what's slowing things down much more this time, of course, is the fact that everybody's waiting for Friday's reports, because we didn't get any last month, to come out, and nobody knows exactly how to feel about it. Which way is it going to go? And when you have that type of thing, I'll just give you an example. On an overnight on beans last night, we only saw about 10,000 contracts traded. Normally, it's in that 30,000 to 40,000. And so people are just, they just don't know what to do. Let's just put it that way.
Wow, that is really quiet. What do we know about volatility on report days?
Well, I've got it for the report day and for 2 weeks after the report day. And it's interesting because January is a very volatile report, which we expect it to be with final production numbers. Normally on report day for corn, you're up 12 or you're down 16. And 2 weeks later, up 11 or down 11. So quite a spread between the two. Beans up 24 or down 25 the day of the report. 2 weeks later, up 24 or down 24. And so not a whole lot of change from the report to 2 weeks later. When you look at the February report, it looks like a real yawner on corn, up 6 or down 3 on the day of the report, up 9 or down 10 2 weeks later. So there's some additional action that goes on in the weeks following the report. Beans, up 7, down 10 on the day of the report. But here's the interesting one. 2 weeks after the report, up 38 or down 61. So, how do you figure out, and you can see why the trade is hesitating, how do you figure out where you're going to go with those kinds of numbers? All it says to me is that we have to be very cautious. There's no question about that.
So I know you're looking forward to those reports. I want to start with the ending stocks for the world, and maybe you can take up South America at the same time.
When we look at the ending stocks, I'll give you the numbers that I have for an average guess compared to what we had in December. They're looking at 307 million metric tons versus 308.8. So a reduction on corn. On beans, quite a reduction from 115.3 in December down to 112.6 on this report. And wheat, exactly the same as it was in December, 268.1, but you would expect that. Ending stocks for the U.S., 1.7 on corn versus 1.78 in December, a small change. Beans down from 955 million down to 926 million. Wheat up from 974 million to 989 million. Now, when you look at South America, this is where things get interesting, because Argentina, not so much. Argentina has a higher corn level at 43. Versus 42.5 in December, and beans went down from 55.5 to 55.1. And we have to remember, these are guesses. The December numbers are the real numbers. When you look at Brazil, corn went from 94.5 in December down to 93.4 for an average guess. The big change came on beans, and that's from 122 down to 117. And so that's a 5 million metric ton cut. If these numbers come in, it should be supported. I mean, even the majority of these numbers are already in the market. But if we actually have these types of numbers, I think it'd be quite supportive to the market.
So one of the other sets of numbers that'll come out, and I think you can work this into maybe the March acreage report for corn and soybeans, but the wheat seedings figure is due out, and that turns our attention from old to new crop as well.
You know, when you look at the final for 2018, we had 32.5 million acres, and they expect seedings to be down a little bit this year at 32.2. That's a little bit higher than you see for, you know, from other people. The world wheat, actually, when you look at wheat is probably the leader when it comes to any of the grain commodities for this year, just because of the fact that we do have issues and we have competition, of course, coming out of Russia, but they don't look like they have enough to be able to supply everybody. So I think it's going to be an interesting year when we get into it. The March numbers will be, I look forward to seeing what happens at that time.
And finally, can you take up some things that you may have looked up about Brazil and what's been happening there as it relates to crops and policy?
Yeah, Brazil is always an interesting place. Now, you heard me say the average guess was 117 million metric tons. Actually, down on the ground in Brazil, they're saying 113 million metric tons due to dry weather. We have started picking up some decent rains down there at this point in time, but you know, 21% of the beans are already harvested, 40 to 45% are already mature. And so, you know, the rains could help maybe 40% of the crop, but that's probably as much as you're going to be able to hope for as far as any kind of an increase in yield. So I think that we'll probably even see it go down from 113 million metric tons. The interesting thing, Todd, remember we always talk about BR-163, the highway. That's the most important highway when it comes to commodities down in Brazil. And we're down to only 35 miles that remain unpaved in the worst areas. You know, remember the last 2 years, we've seen the pictures of the trucks backed up for miles and miles and miles because people couldn't make the hills. Well, they really worked hard this year to be able to get that taken care of. You know, the government really got criticized dramatically last year because of it. But this is I'm going to close with this. This, I think, is so interesting. They started construction on the northern part of BR-163 in 1970 because they wanted to connect the capital of Mato Grosso to the port of Santarém. And they asked for it to be paved, and they wanted it to be a four-lane highway. Well, that's still the plan 50 years later.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you so much, and we appreciate you being with us.
Thank you, Todd. Have a great day.
You too. That is Jackie Vakes with Stuart Peterson. In today's agricultural news, the president mentioned agriculture or farm at least four times during last night's State of the Union address, though one of those was in passing. He did take up trade and the possibility of an agreement with China.
I have great respect for President Xi, and we are now working on a new trade deal with China. But it must include real structural change to end unfair trade practices, reduce our chronic trade deficit, and protect American jobs.
The president also talked about his signature trade deal, the USMCA, or U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, but Democrats have already asked for some changes to that agreement, including stronger enforceability of labor protections, and lawmakers on both sides have suggested there's little hope for approving the new pact, while Mr. Trump's steel and aluminum tariffs on Canada and Mexico remain in place.
I hope you can pass the USMCA into law so that we can bring back our manufacturing jobs in even greater numbers, expand American agriculture, protect intellectual property, and ensure that more cars are proudly stamped with our four beautiful words, Made in the USA.
president also asked Congress to pass legislation that would expand his power to impose tariffs in response to other nations' duties. However, many in Congress are not really yet willing to give up that power and pass it on to the executive branch.
Tonight, I am also asking you to pass the United States Reciprocal Trade Act so that if another country places an unfair tariff on an American product, we can charge them the exact same tariff on the exact same product that they sell to us.
The president, while he was talking about trade, also took up infrastructure, though it was a very small portion of the speech. Here are the whole of the remarks on infrastructure.
Both parties should be able to unite for a great rebuilding of America's crumbling infrastructure. I know that Congress is eager to pass an infrastructure bill, and I am eager to work with you on legislation to deliver new and important infrastructure investment, including investments in the cutting-edge industries of the future. This is not an option. This is a necessity.
The president spent a total of 42 seconds during the State of the Union discussing infrastructure. That includes the two applause lines, and then immediately turned his attention to health care. You can see the whole of the president's State of the Union address online. That was last night on Capitol Hill. Today on Capitol Hill, U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer is set to meet with the Senate Finance Committee and Senate Advisory Committee and to discuss U.S.-China trade negotiations. At the same time, more than 100 business reps and farmers will swarm across the Hill today, pressuring lawmakers and the Trump administration to end the trade war. The fly-in is organized by the Tariffs Hurt the Heartland campaign. Let's switch gears now, but stay in Washington, D.C., where Senate Ag Chair Pat Roberts predicts there will be no more government shutdowns as USDA gears up to implement the new farm bill ahead of critical spring planting decisions.
We're not going to do another shutdown. We're just not. They never achieve their intended purpose. And usually when they occur, why, that first week people say, stay the course. And the second week they say, are we on the right course? And then the third week says, how do I get off this horse?
And Roberts points out there was a five-weeker that shattered glass for a lot of folks, including farmers.
It was tough when you shut down an FSA office and farmers are making decisions. They're making planning decisions right now based on the world supply-demand situation, the situation there in Kansas. We still have wheat on the ground.
Roberts helped shepherd to passage the Ag Improvement Act of 2018, signed into law just days before the 35-day partial shutdown of USDA and other federal agencies. With the shutdown over, but the border wall funding fight still on amid another shutdown deadline a week from Friday, USDA is racing to implement the Farm Bill. Here's USDA Deputy Secretary Steve Sensky.
We're going to be moving just as quickly and prudently as we can to implement it, because as the chairman just noted, farmers, ranchers, others that really depend on a farm bill are waiting for it to be implemented.
Sensky heads up a USDA Farm Bill implementation working group made up of agency and other officials. The deputy secretary says some provisions of the farm bill are so clear they're self-implementing, others will need policy, budget, or legal decisions. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for our Wednesday afternoon. Do visit our website, sign up for the All-Day Ag Outlook, get yourself registered for just $30 at WILLAG.org or by calling 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065. Up next, cover crops. We'll talk with farmer Clint Robinson of Moultrie County, Illinois. So farmers listening will be pretty interested that you're using cover crops and you've got 5 years in your back pocket now. What'd you learn from the beginning to the end of that 5 years that are necessary to make it work?
You know, we started with about 80 acres, which was good on the first year. 2012 was kind of the perfect storm. If you tried cover crops that fall after your crop, we had the drought. So we had a lot of nutrients that we'd put in there for the corn crop. We came in, we planted cereal rye on some acres, annual ryegrass on others. And then we had a lot of warm growing conditions, and it got really tall. Fall or spring of 13 then was wet and cool, and we could not get in to spray it. So we had a mess. And so, you know, you learn probably more from your mistakes and failures than your successes. So kind of made us reevaluate things, take a step back. We went back to winter kill varieties that we didn't have to have that problem. Went back to the drawing board and did some more research. And now we're back to using cereal rye on 100% of our acres, before corn, before beans. And we're having pretty good luck with it so far. Been working out.
When you seed in the fall, are there any things that need to be done to make sure that crop gets up and does its job particularly well?
I guess it depends on the fall. So if and you can't always predict Mother Nature, that's for sure. We like cereal rye, wheat, those kind of things, because if it gets later into the season after October 10th, we can still go out there and seed those things, and they're going to come up. May not get a lot of fall growth, but they will come up and they will be, you know, successful. Whereas if you use oats, brassicas like radishes or turnips, those kind of things are not going to grow after, you know, it gets below 20 degrees for about 3 days. So we kind of got to be selective with what we're doing and be able to adjust on the fly with how much rain we're getting, how fast harvest is moving along, and some of those kind of things.
And do you broadcast seed, I take it?
We have before. What my strategy is now is we've been strip till since 2013, and so I've modified my strip till bar to be able to seed cover crops in rows. So they have our cover crops on 30 inch centers in rows, and then we have a space between it, and we're going to plant, come back and apply our nutrients with a strip till bar in the spring in between the rows of cover crops. And we'll plant into them and then kill them.
Oh, you're going to plant into it and then kill what?
We'll kill the cover crop then.
I thought you were using a winter. I thought you were using one that winter killed anyway.
We used to. We did. So we did that in 13 and 14.
Mm-hmm.
But we wanted the armor on the soil and a living root year-round, which is kind of the basis of soil health, soil regeneration. So we went back to cereal rye in 15, and then ever since 15, we have been able to manage the cereal rye that will overwinter, and we've kind of learned our lessons, I guess you'd say, on management. We've got more comfortable planting into it if it's still alive and green. We did have slug problems 1 year. So, but that was because we killed it, and the slugs moved from the rye into the beans that were just trying to come up and kill beans in large areas of fields.
Hmm.
And so we found if we leave it grow through planting, the slugs would prefer to eat the rye, and the soybeans can come up, and then we kill it, then we don't have that problem anymore.
So because you're no-tilling back into this, relatively speaking, any mm-hmm. planter attachments that you need?
I guess that depends. We've got, we're pretty flexible, and I think that's probably the key to making it work. It's more management intensive, and it just requires some flexibility. So we've got row cleaners. We've taken off all of our no-till cultures. We've got just row cleaners only, and we've got them on an air cylinder, so if something's not working or if the conditions aren't conducive to those, we can just pick them up and they're out of the way. We've got notched closing wheels, spike tooth closing wheels, to help in our higher residue. We're getting a better seed trench closure from instead of this standard rubber closing wheel, we've gone to a cast spike tooth closing wheel.
Clint Robinson is a farmer in Moultrie County, Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You're listening to the Closing Market Report for this Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, it's been an interesting, well, January and beginning of February across the Midwest, especially the upper portions of the Midwest where it was really cold. And now we've got some cold air, we've got some rain. Is it just going to stay interesting the rest of the season? And what implications does that have that come along with it?
Oh, absolutely. Life is interesting no matter how you look at it, right? And weather is a big part of that. It will stay interesting. We're going to have a very active weather pattern. We've got a lot of interesting things going on that's controlling our weather, like a weak El Nino and the solar minimum coming up, a very active 18-year cycle. It's going to be a very good finish to the season. Good is from a meteorological perspective and not from a farmer perspective. From the farming perspective, it's not so great. We're going to see waves of snow occurring across the upper parts of the Midwest. We have quite a bit of snow on the ground already. Another storm coming in tonight. It's probably going to produce a blizzard across parts of Minnesota, Wisconsin, maybe northeastern Iowa, picking up on anywhere from 4 to 12 inches of snow across some of that region. Upper Michigan may get more than 15 inches. And further to the south, rain that will change over to snow and some freezing rain sleet in the lower parts of the Midwest for a brief period of time. We're a little concerned about the Ohio River Basin area because that ground is going to be very saturated here fairly soon with this passage of the storm system and frontal system in that area. And we've got another storm early next week and another one in the following week. And so it's going to be very wet across the Midwest. The immediate concern is for flooding in the Ohio River Basin and maybe parts of the Tennessee River Basin and Northern Delta. In the long-term perspective, that heavy snow in the upper Midwest isn't going to go away. And when we get closer to spring, we're probably going to have a lot more snow that's going to be up there, and then we're going to add more rain to it. So spring planting might be a little bit of a challenge this year.
Well, that's an interesting thought, and I know producers won't be happy about that. They were late in that part of the world last year. It was really cold, though, and they had a whole bunch of snowstorms that caused the lateness. This time around, it's likely to hang on a bit longer, I would assume, because it's just going to be awfully, awfully wet.
Yeah, I think that's right, and the jet stream is going to run right across the U.S. from southwest to northeast, at least through the plains into the Great Lakes region in the heart of spring and on into May, and if that's the case, we're going to be adding more insult to the injury up there. So it is going to be wet, and I think we need to get ready for that.
And finally, turn your attention to South America, where I take it the weather is rather status quo, at least for this year.
Yes, it looks like Argentina will continue to have a good mix of rain and sunshine as we move forward through this next 10 days. There should be enough rain to maintain moisture abundance, which they already have, and they'll have some drying over the next couple of days, and then drying next week to follow the rain that's coming up late this week into the weekend. So a good mix there. And in Brazil, an improving trend is underway. We're going to see more frequent rains from center-west through center-south parts of Brazil's crop country. But the southwest corner of the country, including Mato Grosso do Sul and neighboring Paraguay, are probably going to continue to struggle for moisture, even though there's some coming up late this weekend into early next week. It'll provide some temporary relief, but otherwise they're still going to have a need for ongoing moisture.
Hey, thanks so much.
Have a great day.
You too. That is Drew Lerner. He is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.